Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, this is Margarita Monet from Edge of Paradise, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal podcast. My name is Mark Striegel. I am so glad you've joined me here for tonight's episode. We have a great interview with Margarita from Edge of Paradise. We also are going to be hearing some music, and we're going to be talking about Wendy O. Williams. Today, my co-host is Joe Becht. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Mark?
Good. I'm great. We were trying to get the Skype thing going, and that just wasn't happening, so we got you checking in on the cell phone. It sounds pretty good. So
right.
You had reached out to me in an email, and we were talking via email, and then I feel like I really got to know you a little better when I heard you on the Decibel Geek show, which was about a month ago or so, back in February, I think. And I just thought it was such a great discussion, and really thought you knew your stuff and wanted to definitely get you on an episode of Talking Metal. So thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for having me. The pleasure is all mine. I really, really enjoy your show, and I'm excited about this.
Cool. Well, one crazy thing, and I want to talk about this right off the bat, is when we were sharing emails together, you sent me an article you wrote on Gene Simmons, which I thought was just a great read. But in the article, you mention the, I would call it, rather famous Chicagoland record store, Rose Records, specifically the Downers Grove location, because I believe there were a few different locations
right.
for Rose Records. And I mean, that you used to go to Rose Records, I used to, you know, because I went to Hinsdale Central High School for eighth grade through the end of high school. I was actually in the junior high for eighth grade, and then Hinsdale Central for 9th, 10th, and 11th, and 12th. And I mean, that's where I got all my concert tickets. That's where I bought, you know, Power Slave the day it came out. That's where I would ride my bike. It would take me like 45 minutes to get there on bike to buy stuff. And I remember at the Rat Trap on the back of the bike, I'd be like, you know, riding my bike down Ogden Avenue, cutting through Clareton Hills over to 55th Street, you know, going against traffic with new record releases. I mean, that was the place. What are some of your memories of that record store?
Well, that was the closest one to where I lived at the time, and we actually struck up a friendship with the manager there. I believe his name was Jim Salaby, and he was a really interesting guy. He managed the store. I have no idea whatever happened to him, but really cool. He always got the latest releases in. Like, the mecca to go to in the area for imports and heavy metal was Rolling Stone.
Right.
But that was quite a ride for me. But Rose Records was probably second place for getting the latest releases, and Jim really knew his stuff, and he managed the store real well, and he was involved with some local bands. And we actually were able to, through our friendship with him, he actually got us backstage for a Dio show, and they played at the Aragon Ballroom.
Wow.
On his first tour on the Holy Diver. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. We, you know, we actually met Ronnie and talked to Viv Campbell. Got yelled at by the late, great Jimmy Bain for eating their eating from the deli platter.
Oh, nice.
Rose was a cool place to go, and that was definitely the place to go in the western suburbs. The fact that you just described I know exactly the path you took, and that is quite a treacherous ride for a kid to go on his bike and to carry records.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't.
I'm surprised you're still alive.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, I mean, the things my freaking parents let me do, it's like I'm a dad now. I mean, I got two younger kids, 6 and 8, but it's like my 8-year-old, I can't imagine. I mean, I started riding my bike there when I was like 13, 14 years old. And it was just like, you know, I'd leave before lunch and it was just like, bye, mom. And, you know, I wouldn't come home until like, you know, dinner time. Which opens up a whole other discussion. It's like what we did for this music. And it's, you know, something I don't want to go really into right now, but music for us. And I'm sure I'm making us sound like old guys, which I suppose we are. But, you know, there was such a value in it. You know, I would deliver papers, get money. You know, I'd do chores. I'd get allowance. I felt like I worked really hard as a kid. And that majority of that money went to music, whether it was buying my tickets, buying my albums, and because that hard work went into getting these records, even the bike ride, you know, it the music meant, I think, had more of a value to me, where it's now I think kids can recognize good music, but I don't think they value it like we did back in the 70s, the 80s, even then into the 90s. You know, there was such a value in music, and I think that's important. I really do.
It's extremely important. And yeah, you're right. There was a lot of value to it. There was the artwork involved, the records, and then later the CDs. Now you just download things and everything's so corporate. I think things became more watered down as the iTunes thing happened. And then I really think American Idol and those shows have really killed any type of, you know, the process of bands coming up. I remember when Steven Tyler was on the David Letterman show, and when he was the American Idol judge, and David Letterman said to Steven Tyler, he goes, "I preferred the way you came up and became a rock star, not the way they're doing it on American Idol."
So, right.
Yeah, it was definitely a great time to be a music fan. And I did the same thing. I worked jobs and everything, and my discretionary income went to going to shows and expanding my music collection, and it was more than just the music. And I've met a few rock stars, probably the most famous being Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley. And when I met them for the first time, I told them basically thank you, because it was such an escape for me. It was such a great thing to have in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. And we're going to come back and actually talk about one specific artist tonight, or two, depending how you look at it, the Plasmatics and Wendy O. Williams. Right now, we're going to get into some new music. This is by Edge of Paradise. It's called Dust to Dust. And this will be followed by my interview with Margarita Mona here on Talking Metal.
Wrapped around me as I lay paranoid. who you want to be. Feel what you want to feel. Love how you want to love. Be who you want to be. Feel what you want to feel. Love how you want to love.
This is Mark Striegel of Talking Metal and calling in on the line Margarita Monet of Edge of Paradise. Thanks so much for speaking with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
I was sent over the EP, Alive, and great sound, great job with the vocals, the pianos, the production, the guitar. Everything sounds really, really professional, really great. Let's talk a little bit about Edge of Paradise. Can you possibly give us just a short, you know, 2-minute bio, you know, description of the band, maybe a little of the band's history?
Yes, of course. And by the way, thank you for, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah,
so
good stuff.
Thank you. Cool. So we formed about 5 years ago when I met Dave Bates. He's the guitar player in the band, and he was working. He had a band fronted by Robin McCauley, and they recorded a bunch of songs that had Greg Bissonette and Tony Franklin playing.
Wow.
And the songs never got released because, you know, Robin went on tour with Survivor. Greg went on tour with Ringo Starr. So he had a lot of music left over. And we met working on a project, a totally different project for a local LA producer. And, you know, we had similar visions. Honestly, I was never into metal. My background is I'm a classical pianist. But we, you know, we worked really well together and we, you know, had similar visions. So we decided to start the band and I re-sang the songs. And like 2 months later, we put out the first CD, Mask. But that sounds like a different band because
right.
I didn't write any of the songs. And, you know, it was just something that we could build on. So after that, we started playing shows. We were going through member changes. And then later on, like 3 years now that we've had a solid lineup with Nick Erickson on bass and John Kaminsky on the drums. So it took us a while to really, you know, form the band. And the first song we wrote together was In a Dream. And
wow,
that's
a great song.
Michael Wagner. Oh, thank you very much. So, yeah, when we wrote it, we're like, you know, really want someone great to produce it or, you know, to mix it especially. And, you know, we've always been huge fans of Michael Wagner. And he actually got back to us. And we started a relationship with him. And he ended up producing our second CD, Immortal Waltz. And then we toured some more. We've toured like 30 states already. And we started, you know, recording more music. And this EP, Chuck Johnson produced it. And Chuck is more, his background is with Korn and Slipknot. So
right. That's
why you're here. I mean, you know, we wanted to take the direction of more heavier, edgier, more industrial sound, I guess. And that's where Chuck comes in. He really got those sounds out of us and, you know, also guided us in the direction we wanted to go. And yes, and then we were really lucky to have Jay Rustin mix the songs. He mixed
Anthrax.
He mixed a bunch of, I mean, you know, we got really lucky to have him. And Michael Wagner also, he mixed Mystery on this EP, and then we also had Mike Plotnikoff, and he mixed Humanoid and Dust to Dust.
Cool.
On, you know, two of the songs on here. So yeah, you know, we've just been at it. We just keep recording music and touring, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Now the EP is Alive, and that's also a song on the EP. It's how many songs is the EP? 5 songs, right?
five.
Five. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's quite a bit of variety in musical sounds. I mean, you mentioned In a Dream. At times, that song to me almost has like a Queensryche, a progressive feel to it. But the song Alive is, I don't know, more like kind of metal, almost at times like industrial sounds going on there. And then, you know, I hear piano throughout the EP. So obviously you said you don't come from a metal background. What type of stuff did you grow up listening to? And how does that play into influencing the sounds I'm hearing on the EP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I grew up playing piano, so I pretty much grew up on classical music and theater and that sort of stuff. But I always, like my parents, they had DVDs of like Queen and Led Zeppelin, like their live concerts.
Right.
So I would watch that, you know. But later on, I guess even high school days, I think I started listening to more rock. You know, I like Black Sabbath and Iron Maiden. But honestly, I never imagined I'd be in a heavy metal band. So I always, you know what I really loved? I loved renditions of like, for example, Led Zeppelin having an orchestra do like Kashmir or something.
Right, sure.
So I really love that kind of epic sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I love metal because it's rock in general is music fueled by, you know, lots of emotion, and it's all about attitude, and that's why I really love this genre so much. But yeah, my background is classical. I grew up on that sort of music, but as I got older, now I listen to pretty much everything, except for not too much into pop or rap, but
right.
Yeah.
Cool. And as far as the songwriting goes on the EP, you're doing a lot of the songwriting on piano?
It depends on the song. Dave and I, we usually write and arrange the songs. Honestly, most of the ballads, I have them written on the piano first. Dave usually starts the heavier, the faster ones. Like when he puts a riff, I'll just make up a melody to it, and then I put some keyboards. But lately, like for this CD, I've been playing around with a lot of the industrial sounds. So, some parts I just made up of sound samples, and then we figured out how to transfer that on the instruments. So it all depends on the song, really. But right. Yeah, it's a process. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And so will there be a tour, or are you guys currently on tour? What's the status of live gigs?
Yeah, well, in April we have some shows. We're going to the East Coast in North and South Carolina. And in July we're going to go up to the West Coast. But right now I can't tell you too much because we're in the process of booking the shows.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how our schedule will look like. But I know in September we're going to Europe. We're playing female metal event in the Netherlands. And then we hope to tour Germany and Belgium, in the surrounding areas in Europe. So we've been wanting to take the band overseas for a while. And a lot, of course, depends on this CD. We're really hoping to make it to the charts, so it will help us move the band forward. So I hope all goes well and we'll be touring much more.
Cool. Well, we'll definitely have links up in today's show notes on talkingmetal.com where all our listeners can link over and check out the new music video for the song Alive. We'll also have the links up for the EP, which is available on iTunes, Amazon, and all your normal outlets.
Mm-hmm. And it was actually number one on Amazon. It's number one right now in the hard rock and metal category. Yes, we're super excited. It's doing really good right now.
Congratulations.
We have one more day. Thank you. We have one more day out to get the first week sales. And we're actually doing a guitar giveaway as well.
Oh, cool.
So if you, if people download it, just message us through our Facebook page and we'll enter you in the guitar giveaway.
Oh,
so,
excellent.
Yeah. And we're also mailing out signed postcards of the CD cover. So you'll have something to, some physical thing as well.
Cool. And the website is edgeofparadiseband.com. We'll have that linked. And They have bios for all the band members and links to the YouTube stuff. Also, everything you need is on the website. And I was reading your bio. It said you're originally from Europe, but it sounds like you moved to the States at a young age. Is that correct?
Yeah, I lived in Moscow till I was 11, and then we moved to Houston, Texas.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah, I'm a Houstonian.
So you were in Moscow?
Yeah, in Russia.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. And then you went from Texas to New York. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then from New York to LA. So you've gotten around quite a bit. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. All the coasts, covering all of them.
Right on. Cool. And again, we'll have all the links up in today's show notes. We thank you for taking some time to talk with us here on the show today. And the best of luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet.
It was a pleasure to talk to you. All right.
What you just heard was the song Alive by Edge of Paradise. My co-host on today's episode is Joe, and Joe is a guy that you can check out on the Rock and Roll Geek Show. Do you know what episode that was, Joe?
Not offhand. It was like two or three episodes ago. It was the one right before the Steeler, I think, episode.
Okay. You spoke with those guys about a lot of different stuff. But the thing I liked hearing the most about was your discussion on Wendy O. Williams and the Plasmatics. And at one point you mentioned this song, and it killed me that they didn't play it, because I just was like, as soon as you said it, I was like, fuck yeah, this has to be my favorite Plasmatics song. So let's get it out of the way right now, and then we're going to come back and talk about this band. This is Rock and Roll.
Rock and roll! Rock and roll! Rock and roll!
off the Coup d'Etat album, The Plasmatics, with Rock and Roll. Joe, it's such a great song. Is that your favorite song off the record?
Oh, by far. Yeah. Well, so, I shouldn't say by far, good. Because it's a great record. And it was produced by Dieter Dierks, who just came off the Scorpions.
Oh, okay.
They recorded that out in Germany.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, the Plasmatics are interesting, and I feel really strongly about Plasmatics and Wendy Williams for several different reasons. Number one is I can't stand musical labels.
Right.
And I was never really a big fan of the band when they released the first two albums. And that's ironically when Jean Beauvoir was part of the band who wound up writing songs with Paul Stanley.
Yeah.
So there was actually no connection. Yeah. There was actually no connection there through, you know, this timeline. When I really started getting it, actually I liked Master Plan as a song, but I thought their punk was kind of garbage. There's only a couple punk bands that really mean anything to me, the Sex Pistols, the Ramones. So I saw them on Second City TV with John Candy as the fishing musician, and that was a great show. And they played a Doom song off the Metal Priestess EP. So I bought that, and I thought it was really cool, and it was more metal. And then Wendy O did the crossover with Motorhead. And she's actually credited with Fast Eddie Clark leading the band.
Yeah, I've heard
that. Which goes back to us seeing shows back in the day. I went to the Aragon show. It was like one of the first shows on the tour when Motorhead came to Chicago. And they had the bomber rig and everything. And Fast Eddie did not come out with them. It was this guy in pink tights and ballet slippers. And it was the guy from Thin Lizzy. Bravo.
Yeah.
Playing guitar, and they played like a 20-minute set, and they didn't use the bomber rig or anything, you know. And this is when you got your information through Kerrang, and you know, you have fed it different things. And we found out that Fast Eddie left the band, and he was not happy with the recording sessions with Wendy O. Williams. But anyway, that leads up to the Coup d'Etat album, produced by Dieter Dierks. It's just really heavy. It's full-blown metal. And that's what really, I don't like the fact that everybody just labels Plasmatics as a punk band, because the majority of Wendy O's work was metal. And you know, they opened for Kiss and Creatures Tour. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say that the music on the record definitely had a much more metal vibe, at least what we referred to as metal in 1983 when the record came out. However, one thing that I thought was their look was still very much kind of punk, or maybe not very much, but partially punk, with the, you know, band members having mohawks, and it wasn't it wasn't the typical metal look that you got in 1983. So, which in some ways is very cool, because it just showed that they had their own thing going on. But in other ways, it you got to wonder, did it hurt them? You know, because back at that time, you know, I don't know if younger kids nowadays realize, but the metal and punk scene, I mean, it was a true division. I mean, this is before thrash bands kind of helped cross mend the divide, if you will. You know, and Motorhead was maybe the first of those bands to start doing it, where you actually saw punk kids at a rock show. Was, I mean, that first started happening with Motorhead, you know. So it's like, but in 1983, it was still a lot of division between the two camps, and fights would break out. And so you got to wonder like where the Plasmatics kind of fit in. And I don't think they did, because, you know, they were never truly accepted by the punk community at all. And
no,
I guess you could argue, were they ever really accepted by the metal community? I don't know. What do you think?
I think somewhat, but they obviously never had that commercial success, because they were dropped by Capitol. I think that Wendy O always had that label on her because of blowing up the TVs and using the chainsaws and everything. But during the Coup d'Etat tour, I mean, they still had the mohawks and everything, but they did dress more in a leather. They were going more of it was a hybrid.
Right.
Definitely a hybrid look and sound. And you know, later on, as you said, later on in the decade, you had, you know, bands like Anthrax doing SOD and combining those things. And then you go back to Motorhead, you know, he played bass on a Damned album. And the thing I always, yeah, there was a division between punk and metal. And I, especially, you know, here in Chicago, you had Naked Raygun. And right. I knew guys that worked at Exit. Never really got into it. But when I listened to, like, the original Sex Pistols album, that's just good hard rock. I mean, Johnny Rotten's vocals are maybe what sets it up, or if you want to call them vocals.
Right.
That sets it apart, but, you know, it's basically just power chords and some basic lead guitar. And I always, you know, when I listen to it, I kind of melded it in with all the rest of the hard rock and metal that I listen to. So mm-hmm. I thought it fit a lot into that wheelhouse there. But as far as the Plasmatics, yeah, they definitely had she had a label on her that always stuck. And she definitely moved away from it. And it's unfortunate they didn't get more of a traction commercially.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's, let's just talk about her actual look, you know, with practically her breasts exposed most of the time with the, you know, the electric tape over the nipples. For 1983, that was a pretty extreme look. I actually think it's still extreme look. You know, I'm looking at a picture of her right now.
Yeah. But I mean, she, you know, so she got rid of the mohawk after that. And when she went solo with the Gene Simmons produced album that we'll talk about, she grew her hair, you know, normal. But I always saw her as an empowering figure. She sold sexuality, but she was a strong person. You know, she was in shape and didn't take any shit from anybody. And I liked that. I liked that a lot. And I kind of saw that a little bit. You know, this is going off our wheelhouse, but I saw a little bit of that of Madonna when she first came out too.
Right.
But yeah, I saw something very empowering in Wendy Williams and what she did on stage and what she did live.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing to think about because here's this woman who comes out. And I mean, there's no denying her body. I mean, at least for me, was freaking almost perfect. I mean, she really had this hourglass figure and comes out half naked, more than half naked. And yet you're right. She was a strong figure. I mean, she wasn't like this, you know, bubble-headed ditz. You know, she was a very strong feminine figure. So yeah, definitely interesting. I also, another thing about her, you know, now that we're not really talking about the music specifically right now, is her age and how she was not a kid either. And you look at, yeah, like, what was the last, it was the album after WOW was Commanders of Chaos. Was that what it was?
Right. There was Commanders of Chaos. And then they got back together and did the Maggots album, which I didn't like too much. Commander Chaos, though, I thought was really good.
And she was pushing 40 when that was released. I mean, she was 38, 39 years old. And you look at her, I mean, she looks amazing for that age on that record. But even by the time Coup d'Etat came out, I mean, 83, she was born, I believe, 49. So, I mean, this wasn't a 21-year-old girl either. This was somebody who had experience, had been around, just really unique and amazing rock and roll lady, Wendy O. Williams, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So moving on, yeah, after Coup d'Etat, you said they toured with Kiss. You saw them on that tour?
I saw them on the Creatures of the Night tour. Okay. I was at the University of Iowa, and we drove the 2 hours to Dubuque. And in Kiss Alive Forever, and I've said this on Kiss Alive Forever, says there are 3,000 fans there. There's no way. I mean, it looked like there were only a couple hundred people there,
really?
But it was one of I would have to say it's probably the best live show I've ever been to. And the Plasmatics were accepted well. They were not booed off the stage. Everybody cheered for them. And then Kiss put on a show that, I mean, you think they were putting on a show in front of 20,000 fans,
right,
instead of a few thousand. It was just incredible.
Wow. And
we had no idea if Ace would be there or not. And
yeah, you know, I spoke with somebody else who attended the Creatures tour. I was my parents weren't letting me go to concerts at that age. But, you know, he said the same thing. He got there and they were like, who the fuck is this guy? They thought Ace would be there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They're kind of, it was very vague as far as whether Ace would be there or not. And I remember even reading one of the old fanzines. I think it was Kick-Ass Monthly with Bob Muldowney out in New York. And he interviewed Paul Stanley because that's how low, I mean, Kiss was trying to get back into it, and Paul Stanley was doing interviews with underground fanzines, you know, to try to get the fans back. And they were actually talking about Ace being, you know, they were part of the promo tour, and they were talking about Rocket Ride being part of the set list. But so we had no idea if it would be Ace or this new guitar player, and it was the new guitar player. So I had mixed feelings about that. But as far as the show, it was just, yeah, it was, I would have to rank it as the best concert I've ever been to.
You know, it's interesting too, because you mentioned Creatures, and I don't want to go off on a Kiss tangent here, but Ace, of course, did do the press for it, and he was on the album cover, and you know, I can't remember what book it is. I'm looking at my bookshelf right now. I believe it might be like the Behind the Mask book, one of those official Kiss books from a while ago, interviews like Vinnie Vincent, all the different members. And I remember Vinnie Vincent saying that Ace was physically there in the studio for at least some of the Creatures recording, which, you know, always made me think, you know, is there any chance that any of his playing is on that Creatures record? But I mean, I guess that's been shot down and there isn't, but
right.
It's odd that he was still hanging around the studio.
Well, I think that it had a lot to do with that PolyGram deal where they needed three of the original members for it to stay intact.
Okay.
But, you know, you talk about, you don't want to get off on a tangent and a Kiss, but our next album that we're going to talk about is a Kiss album.
Right, right. So,
that's
so
the W-O-W, next... Yeah.
Yeah. And the W-O-W, you say W-O-W, or I've heard some people say wow, but you say W-O-W.
Right.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I have an original pressing, and it's W period O-W.
Right.
And it's got the sticker on there with special guest, produced by Gene Simmons.
Right.
Special guest Ace Frehley. And the bass player on the album is Reginald Van Helsing, who is Gene Simmons.
Right.
So the song Bump and Grind on here features Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley. Can you name me the last time Gene Simmons and Ace Frehley have played on a song together?
Well, I guess
probably.
Yeah, I don't know. The last time they had played on a song together. Not since Love Gun, really?
They definitely didn't do it on Psycho Circus, yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think they did it on, I mean, maybe Ace played on Charisma.
But, yeah.
You know, some of those songs. But, well, you know, at
what
that
about,
time they were
what
doing
about, yeah, because I guess Unmasked is, you don't think Gene played bass on the Ace songs on Unmasked?
No, I've heard that Ace played all of his bass and Paul would play his bass.
Wow.
And roll session guys in, who knows, you know. But the W.O.W. album, I call it the best Kiss album of the 80s because, yeah, Wendy Williams sings on it and she has her band on it, but this album features playing by Ace Frehley. Gene Simmons plays bass on every song. Eric Carr writes a song and plays on a song. Vinnie Vincent writes the song.
Right.
You have almost half the songs written by Kiss members, including It's My Life, which is written by Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons, and which should have been a single, and I, to this day, cannot understand why Kiss never released it as a single. I think that would have taken them to the next level, no matter what album that is on.
There was a Kiss version of that on the box set, right? The Kiss box set, they did.
Yeah, it should have been on. It's a hell of a lot better than a lot of the garbage they released, you know, since Dynasty. I'll even go back that far. And then you have Thief in the Night, which is written by Gene Simmons and Mitch Weissman from Beatlemania. And, you know, you compare this version to the tinny version on Crazy Nights, and there's no comparison. This stuff's heavy, you know, and I, you know, it came out, between, you know, there was Creatures, Lick It Up, and then this came out between Lick It Up and Animalize. And I thought this was like a natural progression from Lick It Up. And I was really disappointed when Animalize came out because I'm just in love with this album.
Now, do you think on the WOW record by Wendy Williams that some of these songs were already recorded leftover Kiss scraps that she just came in and threw her vocals over, that Gene brought the master tapes down and said, hey, sing over this? Or do you believe that they were all things that were re-recorded? I mean, was Ace, I mean, what year was that? That had to be like, what, 84, 85 WOW?
84.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, Ace was, you know, completely pretty much done with Kiss. Is he like, after he's already officially left Kiss, is he coming back to play on this record with Gene, or is this something that Gene pulled out of the studio and it's something possibly Ace recorded years before?
No, what I understand is he asked Ace to come in and lay down a lead, and that's just about it.
Wow.
And, you know, I've met Gene Simmons a couple times, and the last time I met him, I asked him who played the drums on Larger Than Life.
Right.
That's one of the big questions. If I ever meet him again, I'm going to ask him about how do you get Ace Frehley to play. I don't even know if he would remember or answer, honestly.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of mystery around this album. But I think, the songs were recorded in the studio. The way I read it is that Gene, after the Plasmatics went on tour with Kiss on the Creatures tour, Gene Simmons definitely wanted to produce the next Plasmatics album. The Plasmatics were dropped from the record company, and it became a Wendy O. Williams solo album.
Okay.
So Gene has his hands all over this. And like I said, there's a song on there called, I think it's the first song on the second side, Ready to Rock. And it's written by the Plasmatics members, Richard Stotts and Swenson. But Paul Stanley, it's just Paul Stanley playing guitar, the drummer drumming, and her singing. And it's really reminiscent at the time when they were on tour, Paul Stanley would go into this guitar solo of his own. And it's really reminiscent of that. So even the songs that weren't written by Kiss members has Kiss all over it.
Right, definitely. And the album, not much of a commercial success, right?
No, it wasn't. It got played a lot by myself, but
right,
no,
right.
A lot of commercial
success. Yeah.
She had the Commander of Chaos after that. I saw her live on the Commander of Chaos tour.
Did she tour in support of WOW?
You know, I don't remember,
right,
honestly.
Right.
I guess I should have looked that up, but I remember I saw her on the Commander of Chaos tour, and that was a small club called Broadway Jacks here in Chicago. They had great bands. I mean, I saw Rat there with 20 people in the crowd before they broke. And we were up front. She was cool, man. She talked to us. She let us grab her ass and everything. And
wow.
It was a great show. You know, she put her guitar player on her shoulders, a la Angus Young and Bon Scott, and walked around the stage. It was a great show. But they never really had the big commercial success. And she always had that label that she was a punk rocker. And, from there they went on to the reunion with the Maggots, and I saw them at the old exit with that. And I didn't really, it was kind of a concept album, and I really didn't get into it that much. And then unfortunately she had some mental health issues that led to, an unfortunate situation.
Right. And she also, you know, she did some TV work. She was in a MacGyver episode, I believe. She was also the movie Rock and Roll, no, Reform School Girls, right? Was a fairly
Reform School Girls, yeah.
Big cult classic movie that came out right around that time. And she had a big part in that. And also the song Reform School Girls, which I remember looking for online a number of years back, and it was rather hard to find. I think it was up on YouTube, but she recorded a song for the soundtrack of that too. But what a story. And a figure that, yeah, never really broke through to the mainstream, but she was just a real, as a kid, just her image, her look, her sound, her attitude was definitely a big impression on a lot of teenagers throughout the world. So yeah, a tragic loss, though. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just makes you wonder what happened in the end there. Obviously, like you said, mental health issues, her life ended in what, before she was 50, I think late 40s she was at that time, because right. She didn't make it out of the 90s, I know that.
Yeah, so just backtracking a little bit, she did always pay tribute to Motorhead, so she did No Class on Coup d'Etat, and then Commanders of Chaos, she did Jailbait.
Right.
And those were great. I thought those were great renditions of Motorhead. But then after her music career ended, I believe she went up to University or UConn, you know, Storrs, Connecticut, in that area, and ran a health food store, I believe. But she had issues with depression, which I take very seriously. Right, and so. She had a few, like, brutal, brutal suicide attempts. I mean, she wanted to get it done, and eventually she did, unfortunately. But even her attempts were pretty, pretty graphic. And, mental illness is not something to be taken lightly. And unfortunately, that's how her life ended.
Yeah. Now, Rod Swenson, is that Swenson? Is that how you pronounce his name? He was always kind of like manager to her, and was he her partner too for a while? Were they a couple?
I believe, you know? So, yeah.
That's always the vibe.
Yeah,
I got.
Yeah, he was with her from the beginning. Yeah, she led a rough life, and I think at one time she hitchhiked and wound up in New York City. I think she was working in Times Square's, when Times Square wasn't like Disneyland. It was
right.
Times Square back in the 70s, 80s. It was all adult oriented and drug addicts. And I believe he was with her, you know, as a manager and partner for all those years. And he was with her till the end.
Right.
With that. Yeah. Do you know, I would love to, you know, interview those people about her. I think it would make a fascinating documentary about her life and her career and everything.
I did speak with Rod back in the late 90s when I was working on a show for VH1 called the 100 most shocking moments of rock, and one of them was the whole story of her arrest. Yeah, and I got to talk with him on the phone, and he seemed really, because she had died at that point, and he seemed really concerned with making sure the right story was told, and that he had mentioned to me, I remember, that already because of this new thing, the internet at that time, there were things getting out there that weren't right and were becoming listed as fact on bios that had been posted about her. And he was very concerned that what we told in this VH1 story was done right. Were you going to say something else?
No, I think that's fascinating that you were able to interview him.
Yeah, we should try to track him down.
Someone posted, I saw somewhere, someone posted a recent picture of Richie Stotts. Now, this was the guy that, the skinny, awkward guitar player with the blue mohawk, and then when they were the punk band, he would wear a ballet tutu, and he just looks like a regular dude. He's wearing a golf shirt and has khaki pants on. He's with his wife, and he's just, I don't even know what he's doing, but he would never figure that at one time he was in a punk band that became a metal band.
Right.
It was pretty interesting, yeah.
Well, right now, let's check out a song off of Commander of Chaos that you mentioned. This is off of Wendy O. Williams' 1986 release. Again, Commander of Chaos, and this song is Jailbait.
Yeah.
That was Jailbait by Wendy O. Williams. Joe, I just want to thank you for joining us on this episode of Talking Metal, and it sounds like you might be doing some writing for us on TalkingMetal.com, so I hope that happens, and I look forward to it happening. Maybe we'll even get something on Wendy O. Williams at some point.
Yeah, it will happen. I just it's something I love. I love to write, and I love music, and I love your show. So the pleasure was all mine. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Is there a place people can get in touch with you online? Do you do Twitter or anything like that?
I'm on Twitter. I don't do Facebook. You know, you can find me on Twitter. I don't do a lot of tweets, but
okay.
If you want, you can look up my name and I'm out there. You might find my son. Son plays baseball on the West Coast, so he might find him instead. But anyway, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet.
It's really, really an honor to be on.
Well, thank you for schooling us on the Plasmatics and Wendy O. Williams. And what should we end with here? What song do you want to hit?
All right, well, this is my go-to song, and I love the WOW album immensely, and I'll stand by saying it's the best Kiss album of the 80s. I want you to play Bump and Grind because it features Ace Frehley on lead guitar and Gene Simmons on bass, and there's not a lot of songs since Dynasty probably they can say that about.
Right on. Here it is, little Wendy O. Williams with Bump and Grind. Slow, do you wanna fall?